Yesterday, a federal judge temporarily blocked the Trump administration's effort to withhold federal money from so-called sanctuary cities. These are cities that limit their cooperation with immigration enforcement.
Just a minute. We'll talk to an expert about this news and immigration policy under President Trump. First, we're getting a local perspective from Chuck Kornbach, WPR news reporter based in Milwaukee. Chuck, welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Well, Chuck, how is this ruling being received in Milwaukee?
Well, it's being called by county officials a partial victory or a major victory. They're very happy that the judge in San Francisco has at least temporarily blocked President Trump's executive order trying to limit federal funds if communities limit their cooperation with immigration enforcement. But there's a wrinkle here in Milwaukee County.
What's the wrinkle?
Well, of course, that last week, Attorney General Jeff Sessions sent letters to Milwaukee County and eight other communities around the U.S. Asking the county to demonstrate its compliance with a federal rule that prohibits local and state governments from limiting communication with the Department of Homeland Security about the immigration status of individuals. We're especially talking about undocumented residents. The federal government, Trump administration, feels that some local law enforcement aren't sharing enough information with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And there was an updated statement today from Milwaukee County about that letter.
And what was in the letter?
Well, it says that this is, again, according to the Milwaukee County Board, at issue, they say, is a 2012 resolution that places condition on honoring requests for detaining some individuals. The county says immigration detainers are not mandatory, and they say the 2012 resolution does not restrict information about sharing immigration status. And therefore, the county is not in violation of the federal rule that Attorney General Sessions recently wrote about.
So what happens next? Are there teeth in this back and forth on the behalf of the federal government?
Well, this, you know, a statement today from Milwaukee County. I was told yesterday by County Supervisor Marina Dmitrievic, that the County Corporation Council, law enforcement, and others are working to provide more formal response to the federal government. Attorney General Sessions gave the county and the other jurisdictions about 2 months to reply. So they say they're going to have something more formal for the federal government. But this a document today, this press release today, seems to be the basis of their argument.
And looking at the bigger issue of funding from the federal government for so-called sanctuary cities, is there funding on the line in Milwaukee?
Yeah, it's about $900,000, a public safety grant that goes to both some to the Milwaukee Police Department and some to the prosecution, the district attorney's office for prosecution efforts. So it's not a small amount of money. Of course, it's not as large as some of the other communities are being faced with challenges to their federal monies. But it's sizable. And, you know, I don't think Milwaukee County wants to lose the money, but they're going to have to, according to this effort so far from Attorney General Sessions, they're going to have to really spell out how they're complying, or at least how they're not blocking communication with ICE.
Well, thanks a lot for that update, Chuck. We'll have to keep tracking that with you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Chuck Kornbach, WPR news reporter based in Milwaukee. And Sarah McKinnon joins us now for more on the ruling and what it means for immigration policy. She's an associate professor of communication arts at UW-Madison. Sarah, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, Sarah, to be clear, what is a sanctuary city? Do we have an agreed-on working definition?
Yeah, this is a very confusing term, and in part it's because there is no working definition of what this is, or concrete definition. I think one of the things that's clear and important to understand is the difference between the sanctuary movement of the 1980s, which was a movement to assist Central American refugees that were fleeing civil war, and this was a movement that happened in mostly in the U.S. Southwest in churches, and what we think about today as sanctuary cities. And sanctuary cities, again, there is no concrete definition, but basically what it means is that sanctuary cities will not, or basically choose not to have a relationship, communication between local law enforcement and immigration and customs enforcement officials. And this can look a lot of different ways. And it's not just cities, it's also counties. And so that's where the confusion starts to come in.
And campuses.
And campuses,
that as well.
That's right.
Can you tell us of a few of the cities and others that might be falling under that tent of sanctuary city right now?
Yeah, so first of all, there are sanctuary cities that name themselves as sanctuary cities. These are the big ones like San Francisco that we hear about, Chicago, Milwaukee. But there are also sanctuary cities that operate in a more implicit way and don't name themselves as such. But certainly San Francisco, New York, the big cities are the place where we see most conversation around this term.
So these are big cities, but do they have the power to have a dramatic effect on immigration policy in the United States, or is this more a point of friction where there's some disagreement about how we want to enforce immigration in the country?
I think it's both. So if we think about our big cities, this is where many undocumented communities live, and so the notion of sanctuary city matters greatly. Imagine being undocumented and not feeling like you can trust your law enforcement officials in your city. That breeds an amount of distrust and fear. And so in that way, yeah, this really matters. In another way, immigration is a federal, is a part of the federal government. And so I think we're sensing a bit of friction between cities and the federal government.
Was there any of the friction you talk about or political back and forth during the Obama administration and in his efforts to work with immigration policy, or is this something new that we're seeing with the Trump administration?
So it did happen during the Obama administration. Obama implemented a program called Secure Communities, which was to encourage a relationship between local law enforcement, like county sheriffs and ICE officials. There was a sense during the Obama administration that local law enforcement were mandated to do that. That was pushed back, and so there was incentivizing of relationships. And so this is not a new thing with the Trump administration.
And what was your initial reaction to the original executive order issued in late January that was going to deny federal funding to these so-called sanctuary cities? What did you think of that?
So, I mean, it's followed along with the campaign rhetoric that we heard all along. And in many ways, that executive order was not a surprise. We heard about it during the campaign. And so it certainly wasn't a surprise to me to see that being one of the first things that President Trump did upon entering office. I think I did think about it also in terms of the relationship between the federal government and money that comes from the federal government to cities and what that looks like, how that plays out.
In terms of leverage, as you were getting it there, the power dynamic, is this a big stick that the federal government could wield against sanctuary cities denying some funding?
I think the question is, what federal funding could they limit? And so the 10th Amendment makes it pretty clear that policies that are implemented, relationships between federal funding, there has to be some sort of connection between the policy and the funding that is being either taken away or given. And so that's, I think, an important question here.
And that's at issue. And the city of San Francisco is the first to sue the Trump administration over this executive order. How are immigration matters, as we know, handled in San Francisco? Why do you think this happened in San Francisco first?
San Francisco has been time and again the sort of centerpiece to the sanctuary cities movement. They implemented their Sanctuary Cities Act in 1989 and has really organized around that in many ways and have continued to create further policies under the umbrella of the sanctuary city law that give undocumented communities more leeway to use social services and to trust local law enforcement. So it's created an atmosphere of trust and cooperation, I think, more.
And we don't have to get too deep into the legal weeds here, but what was the argument from the city of San Francisco about their case and where we stand so far with this?
So a primary aspect of the case is that it wasn't, I think the city of San Francisco was fearing loss of a lot of funds, but marginal funds in relation to immigration. And so their main argument was that it's not constitutional. There's no right here to put in danger funds for helping public housing, for example, that there's no basis there in the law. That was the main piece.
And that it has to flow through Congress, not
exactly.
From the White House.
That's right. That Congress holds the purse strings for how funding is doled out.
And there was also some talk, especially from the judge presiding in that case in San Francisco, who was saying that he saw a discrepancy between what government lawyers argued in court about the effect and the impact,
yeah,
the scope of it all, really, and what the Trump administration officials said in public.
That's right.
What
so,
did they say?
Yeah, Trump is documented as saying, I'm going to use this as a weapon against you. And the attorneys in the case said, no, it's really marginal, the effect. This isn't going to be used to cut all public spending to cities. It's going to be marginal. And so there was a real disconnect between the public rhetoric and the legal rhetoric in the case.
We're talking with Sarah McKinnon now from UW-Madison, talking about news that a federal judge temporarily blocked the Trump administration's attempt to withhold federal funds to so-called sanctuary cities.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the concept of sanctuary cities, sanctuary communities that don't fully cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement? What do you think about President Trump's executive order threatening a cutoff of funds and this court ruling saying President Trump, at least temporarily, can't do that? What do you think about the immigration policy you're seeing so far in the first 100 days of the Trump administration? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll pick up our conversation and get to your calls in just a little bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our discussion now about immigration policy under President Trump with Sarah McKinnon from UW-Madison.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about immigration policy under President Trump, about sanctuary cities and other communities? Have you personally been affected by this federal immigration debate? Call in now, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first caller now. We've got Jeff joining us in Waukesha. Jeff, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I struggle with this back and forth because I see both sides of the conversation. But one thing that always sticks out is we always say these are undocumented people, but reality is they're not here legally. And so if you are not here legally, say living in a non-sanctuary city, you should have the same rights as anyone here. If we're gonna say, for example, Milwaukee has a sanctuary city, it just seems like you're discriminating those other people that are undocumented, that are not able to get to those cities. They're treated differently. So I think the law should either go one way or the other. It's either include all undocumented people or, you know, abide by the law. The law is you're undocumented, just like if I'm driving right now without my driver's license. If I drive through Milwaukee and it's okay, but as soon as I get to Kenosha, you must have your license. It's a very, very, you know, unclear. You know, they're not legally here, so why are we spending money to give them benefits? I guess I'll let you comment on that.
Jeff, thanks for that. And Sarah, he's saying essentially the law should be applied across the board. Some residents in certain cities might be getting additional protections that somewhere else, a citizen somewhere else, or an undocumented immigrant might not have. So what do you think about that argument?
So this is really a question about the relationship between local law enforcement and federal immigration enforcement. These are two separate matters. The reason that we might advocate for local law enforcement not to be connected, not to have a relationship with ICE officials, is so that people living in all of our communities can access the services that they need. So imagine if you're a domestic violence survivor and you fear going to police, you fear going to the hospital to access social services. These are separate matters, and so really the question about sanctuary is about the relationship between the federal government and local law officials.
And the city of San Francisco made the additional argument that this would cost them money, the federal government immigration plan, because they wouldn't have the cooperation that they had right now, the open doors with law enforcement, which could lead to incurred costs for the city.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't. So first of all, it's the taking away of the money if they don't do it. I'm not sure about what extra costs, but certainly there would be legal costs associated with it.
Thank you for that call. And we'll take another now from Jim joining us in Hurley. Jim, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment in regards to this. Pretty much a non-believer in the sanctuary city. In regards to Trump getting in regards to the topic we're talking about, I've been a lifelong Democrat voter. I ended up switching and voting Republican this time in regards to decisions like this, in regards to Trump being harder on immigration stance and things like this. And I think maybe there's a lot of people that were lifelong Democrat voters that ended up switching to Trump because they felt he would actually do something in regards to his stance on immigration. And I'm proud to say that that he got in and that he's actually going to do something.
Jim, thank you for that call. And President Trump has made the argument since the campaign trail that crime was being committed by illegal immigrants and that he wanted to get you. He's been calling them the bad guys out, and to focus on that as a point of kind of law and order and protecting citizens. And he's pointed often to the killing of Catherine Steinle during his arguments about sanctuary cities. Can you talk about that case?
I think what's fascinating about this, the question about crime, is that President Obama deported more undocumented individuals than any other president before him. And if we look at the numbers of the first few months of President Trump in office, the numbers are the same. There's no more raising in deportations. There's been a raise in detentions, but the raise in detention has been of non-criminal individuals. So individuals that don't have a criminal record. And so I think we're seeing an interesting disconnect between the political discussion, the public message, and what's bearing out in reality. The case of Catherine Steiner, in a lot of ways, that's an exceptional example. Certainly, violent things happen, bad things happen. But if you look at the statistics, immigrants are not more violent than other individuals in this country. In fact, pretty significantly less.
What do you think has changed for immigration policy in America in the almost 100 days since President Trump took office? And what's the prospect for the future with some of these law cases that are still unresolved and will be fought down the road?
I think we're going to see more detentions. So detention, ICE arrests have been happening at a significant rate. Immigration arrest rose 32% in the first few weeks of the Trump administration. So I think we're going to see more of that. The memorandum that came out about a month ago that named who is in fear of deportation basically named anyone who has a status that's non-citizen. So anyone is really under threat of deportation. It really gave a lot of parameters for who could be detained and who could be deported. And so I think in a lot of ways we're seeing a rise of fear and a rise of politicizing of the debate and the conversation around immigration.
And we've been talking about how the Trump administration was looking to use funding to these cities as a way to get compliance for immigration policy. Are there other tools that the federal government could use that might be distinct from this funding to cities? Are there other aspects that could come into play?
Well, I mean, we are seeing that. So ICE has a number of capacities to do that. And under the Trump administration, I think we see the ICE office using their power to do raids and detentions with more frequency. That, I think, is going to happen more. And immigrant communities around the country are really fearful of this. I mean, we've really seen a rise in fear amongst immigrant communities around the country, Wisconsin included. And I think that's significant to pay attention to the human aspect of what this means as well.
And do you expect there to be more in terms of legal battles in these clashes between the federal government and local governments about where one's jurisdiction ends and another's begins?
Certainly, absolutely. And as the executive orders continue to be introduced, I think we're going to see continued challenges, especially in relation to the relationship between the federal government and states, as well as cities, really challenging the constructs of federalism and how that plays out.
Let's take one more caller here. We've got Rich joining us in Gale's Corners. Rich, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I feel that if you come over here legally, you already know you're breaking the law. So you're coming over here legally, and then you're expecting to be treated like a citizen who has been born here and has all the legal rights. Usually when you're coming over here, you have nothing anyways. So when the first thing you're doing, everything you're doing from that point that they're here, is going to be an illegal act.
And I'm going to jump in, Rich, so we're just about out of time. Sarah, is there a sense about where public opinion lies with this question?
Public opinion, I think, is quite divided. I think we have, in some ways, two really strong opinions on the question of immigration and not a lot of in between. And I think, you know, as we move on this issue, on this conversation, we need to explore the how do we get to the in between.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for coming by the studio and talking today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
That was Sarah McKinnon, Associate Professor of Communication Arts at UW-Madison, joining us to talk about news that a federal judge temporarily blocked the Trump administration's effort to withhold money from so-called sanctuary cities.